The next case for argument is United States against Carr. Mr. Campbell.
Good morning. My name is Stanley Campbell. I'm here on behalf of Thomas Carr. Our argument is that the opinion of the trial court erred.
Is your case any different from the one we just heard?
Factually, it's not. Mr. Carr traveled from out.
Is there any difference? Do you have different arguments, different considerations?
Our argument is ex post facto would be the same argument as the previous case.
All right. What does your indictment say?
The
indictment in your case is not in your appendix. So what does it say?
Our indictment says that, I believe it says that on or about July of 2007 is the...
July of 2007 is a long time after the Attorney General's regulation. So, in fact, your case may be materially different from the other one because your client then had 4 months after the effectiveness of the statute to comply. So there's an element that postdates the statute's effectiveness.
I thought that Mr. Carr's relocation to Indiana occurred sometime in 2004 or 2005.
That is correct. And it is that which we feel makes it an ex post facto problem in that his punishment, potential punishment, has been increased as a result of the passage of the act in 2007.
No, but that's like a recidivism law, right? If he'd registered before July, he'd be off the hook, right?
I'm sorry?
If he had registered before sometime after February 27th, but before July, he'd be off the hook.
He would have been in compliance with Title 42, the registration requirement. But the violation... violation is under Title 18, 2250, and that statute requires that the person travel and that they...
At least as I understand it, it's a pretty well-established doctrine that if Congress enacts a new law with, say, 3 elements, it's enough to commit any one of the elements after the effective date of the statute. You can avoid liability by complying with the new law, that is, by not committing any of the elements. As Judge Posner said, that's pretty common in these gun cases. The penalty for a felon being in possession of a firearm may increase, and the felon gets the new penalty if he possesses the firearm after the penalty is increased, even if the firearm moved in interstate commerce before the penalty increased.
We would argue the difference is that the transportation of the firearm in interstate commerce is a jurisdictional element that gives the court jurisdiction in the gun case.
It's just an element.
But the triggering elements of a violation of the act in this case are that Mr. Carr traveled and that he then failed to register as a sex offender.
Well, tell me this. Would you agree that the registration requirement standing alone would not violate the ex post facto clause?
Title 42 in and of itself, we would not make that argument, Your Honor.
So is there anything in the text of SORNA that would support treating the criminal penalties in a Section 2250 differently from the civil registration scheme?
We would argue that the criminal act in Title 18 is something different than the registration requirement under 42, and that's the argument we have, that the court incorrectly relied upon the Smith case. In the Smith case, the Supreme Court was looking at an Alaska statute that just concerned itself with registration and notification. This is a case that involves criminal prosecution. And while Mr. Carr failed to register upon his travel to Indiana, that all occurred prior to the effective date, the passage of the SORNA Act. He would have violated the previous act, and we've acknowledged that, which would have subjected him to a punishment of up to a year.
But you can have a registration statute that requires people who committed, you know, sexual offenses before the act became effective to register, right?
Correct.
So what's the difference?
Indeed, that's the Supreme Court's holding back in 2003, something like that. So that's water under the bridge.
The difference is that in this particular case, Mr. Carr is being prosecuted for a criminal violation under Title 18. And
That's not a difference. He's being prosecuted for not registering, right?
No, we disagree. We think he's being prosecuted for traveling and not registering.
Well, that's a matter of statutory interpretation.
Yes.
Right?
The way we read...
But I didn't think you were making a statutory interpretation argument. I thought you were just making the ex post facto argument.
Ex post facto. The way we read the statute is that the first part of it, which is the part of the statute that identifies who the population is that is subject to the criminal act. And it goes on to say that you can violate the act either by being in violation of federal law or traveling. That's one element. The second element is that after having traveled, you fail to register. It becomes ex post facto because Mr. Carr completed both of those elements.
What difference does it make? Suppose it was a registration requirement with no travel element in it. Just required everyone who'd ever
committed a sex offense to register. That's just Smith against Doe, which holds there's no ex post facto problem in that circumstance.
Correct. But in Smith v. Doe, the Supreme Court was not addressing a criminal sanction.
Why should it matter that it also requires travel? Right? Sexual offense plus travel.
That's unrelated to ex post facto. It might be related to Congress's commerce power, but it's completely unrelated to ex post facto.
Well, our argument is that the elements of the statute that are required to be violated before the person becomes subject to penalty are the travel and the...
I know, but you realize that if there weren't travel but just the sex offense, there'd be no problem. So why is a problem added because there are other elements?
The ex post facto argument is applicable because the penalty is increased under the 2006
legislation. But that's true if the only requirement were that he have been a sex offender.
And that would be the first part of the second provision of the statute if he were in violation of federal law.
I think you're completely lost. So one statute says that if you've ever been a sex offender, you have to register. And there you agree. And then if you don't register and you're punished, that's not ex post facto. That you agree. Now suppose it says you have to have been a sex offender and you have to have blue eyes. Would that change the ex post facto analysis? Blue eyes, because sex offenders with blue eyes are more effective in seducing children. Brown-eyed. Would that alter the analysis of ex post facto?
If after the...
Don't say if. Answer my question.
Yes, if the person had blue
Don't
eyes.
Don't say if.
All right.
Does the fact that there are two elements that can have been committed, done in the past... Does that alter the ex post facto analysis?
I'm not sure I understand your question. I have to confess that.
Suppose that the crime is failing to register if you've ever been a sex offender and if you've ever been a blue-eyed sex offender.
If that's the statute and the person met those criteria, then... they could be found guilty under the act.
Sure.
met the criteria at the time of the enactment and passage of the Act.
No. These are conditions, activities that pre-exist the date of the statute, right? You were a sex offender, now there's a registration. That's not ex post facto. You were a sex offender with blue eyes. You were a sex offender who owned a Cadillac, right? Do adding those elements to the crime, to the eligibility for the requirement of registration, does that have anything to, does that alter the ex post facto analysis?
Well, yes, I think it does. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. Ms. Lowry.
May it please the Court, Counsel, my name is Leslie Miller Lowry on behalf of the United States. It is the position of the United States that there is no ex post facto violation present in the prosecution of Thomas Carr. The statute does not violate the ex post facto clause when it applies to a crime that was began prior to but continued after the statute's effective date. The crime here was not completed until after the passage of SORNA. The ex post facto clause is implicated then when all elements are completed before the passage of the Act. The crime at issue here is the failing to register, not the interstate travel. The gravamen of the offense under 2250 is the failing to register. And that offense...
Does the indictment and verdict exclude the possibility that Carr was convicted for not being registered on February 28, 2007?
No, the indictment does not exclude that. The indictment charges, as you read, July of 2007, which gave him ample time.
Right. And what did the instructions say?
This was a guilty plea.
Oh, sorry. Conditional plea. So what did the plea colloquy say?
As I recall the plea colloquy, I don't believe that the plea colloquy referenced the February 27th Attorney General's issue or interim regulation. We specifically went to July because there was a triggering of he was arrested on some state charges in July, and that was the point at which we determined, or law enforcement determined, that he was unregistered. So the indictment, as far as the date, was posed from that time. There was no reference.
Well, given the limitations on the record, at any time has the defendant contended that he was, for example, registered actually in July 2007 and his unregistration was in February 2007?
No, sir. As I recall the record, there has been no such contention made by Mr. Carr.
Okay.
Is there any time limit on how far back the government could reach for a conviction under Section 2250? In other words, what about a convicted sex offender who moved to a new state and failed to register in 1995?
There is no limitation within SORNA about how far back the government can go with regard to the conviction. It's the position of the United States, again, that this offense is not completed until he failed to register under SORNA, and that could not happen until after the effective date. And the same logic has been applied in analogous situations, as been referenced by the court, with regard to firearms that have previously traveled in interstate commerce and may have traveled in interstate commerce prior to the passage of Section 922 G1, and someone comes into possession of it after that.
Yes, I don't think you need to labor that point. That's really all resolved by Smith against Doe.
It's the basic position of the United States that there is no ex post facto issue here because all of the elements of the crime were not completed prior to the passage of SORNA. He did not... What he did not do was register after the effective date of SORNA. He's charged in in July of 2007, which gave him ample opportunity after the Attorney General's interim regulation in which time to register, and he did not. So that is the triggering element that has occurred after the passage of the Act, which takes it outside of the ambit of being an ex post facto violation. If the Court has no questions for me, that's all the comments of the United States.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under